Yes.
Last night, the discussion, you were saying everyone's dissatisfied. You weren't saying that to be dissatisfied meant you're unhappy, were you? Or were you?
Pardon?
Were you meaning that dissatisfaction means you're unhappy or not?
Well, why not?
Well, it could be either, then, couldn't it?
Dissatisfaction is a form of unhappiness, isn't it? Or
yeah, you should think so. Yeah.
It is unhappiness that gives rise to dissatisfaction. Both are almost almost the same.
Right, but then you're saying everyone is dissatisfied, that means everyone's unhappy then.
Isn't it?
I didn't think so.
Huh?
I didn't think so.
You wouldn't think so?
No, I don't think everyone's unhappy.
Or the grass is green on the other side, isn't it? So you only think that the other person is happy, not unhappy at least. Mm-hmm. I don't think so. Come. You merely think, when you say that not everyone is unhappy, you are merely suggesting that, well, I am unhappy, but then look at her, she is not unhappy. But you ask her, she may even think that you are the happy one.
Well, I thought I was until last night. Get me thinking of that. But then,
this is quite simple, sir. As long as you are dependent upon anything for your life, you are unhappy.
Why?
You figure out why. Because I am dependent upon her for my food, for my comfort, for my companionship, whatever it is. And I'm constantly worried whether am I pleasing her, am I, is she pleased with me, is she not pleased with me? Will she walk away? Or if nothing happens, well, I may die, she may die.
But that shouldn't necessarily make her unhappy, should it?
Oh my God, that is unhappiness. That is unhappiness.
But if you don't feel unhappy, then who's to say you
Pardon?
Are unhappy? But if you don't feel unhappy, who's to say you are unhappy?
Well, what do you mean by that?
Well, you said you're
unhappy. I think you are defining unhappiness in a very pretty narrow way, so that you are prepared to say that, well, we. Now, I'll give you an example without defining it actually. It seems, according to the Food and Drug Administration of America, some tinned and canned food is passed as okay. You know, you can market it, you can sell it, can distribute it, as long as it does not contain more than a certain percentage of some rubbish. Girl's hair or rat droppings. cockroach droppings. And if it doesn't go beyond a certain percentage, let's say even 3%. It's nothing. You may not even notice it. It's all right. It can be marketed. But that is not to say that that food is pure. So, even so, it is possible that you have redefined happiness or unhappiness in such a way that you accept certain things as normal. An occasional headache, fighting with your wife, you know, once in 15, 20 days.
I accepted that long ago. But then who does define happiness then? Like?
That is the point. So you have redefined the whole thing, and then according to your redefined percentage, there are many people who are happy. Well, that's possible. But we are going the whole hog.
But then if I redefine it, what if I redefine it from? Like, is there an original definition of, say, happiness?
That's quite simple. Are you happy? Which means, are you always happy? Are you never dissatisfied? Are you never unhappy? I am sometimes happy. That's like a non-vegetarian saying, yes, sometimes I eat flesh. Nobody eats flesh all the time. We even eat food only sometime. So, when there is this threat of unhappiness, we are unhappy. And the threat of unhappiness hangs on the head of every one of us. And it is something which is unavoidable as long as we are dependent upon anybody or anything for anything. If that includes all beings on earth, that includes all beings on earth.
But there must be some people who think, like, perhaps deep down, that they're happy all the time. There must be people in the world that think that. Who says
I can keep on thinking I am happy, but it doesn't make me happy. Sorry.
It should make you sad.
Sorry. I can reconcile myself to a certain situation. But the enlightened man is happy in a very complicated way. Even that is not a very simple happiness. He becomes aware that this leads to that. This leads to that. Which means, if I have a desire, a craving, the craving leads to dissatisfaction, frustration. The craving leads to unhappiness.
Does that mean because everything's impermanent or temporary?
Sure. And you are depending upon what is impermanent and temporary. You become aware of that. When you become aware of that, you realize that all life is tainted by unhappiness, sorrow. But the awareness of this sorrow is not sorrow. The awareness of this unhappiness is not unhappiness. And therefore, if the awareness can be sustained there without reaching out to the objects on which you I've so far depended, you can stay happy. But it is very much like saying, if a knife falls on this rug, the rag gets torn. You look at it, okay, it's the rug that got torn, not me. There are some funny stories, I don't know how far these are credible. It seems there was a great sage in South India who was constantly in a transcendental state, and he was not even wearing clothes, he was wandering about naked. And this was during the period of Muslim rule of India, when there were small governors and so on of districts. And those governors were also sort of rajas, princes. And all those princes had their harem. And it is said that this holy man, unaware of where he was walking, he walked past this prince's harem. There were his girls playing around, and there was this man walking about naked. And this prince was really cross. So he asked a soldier, his bodyguard, what does he mean by exposing himself like this in front of my girls? So go catch hold of him and chop off his arms in punishment. And the soldier ran up to this man, this holy man, caught hold of one arm, chopped, another arm chopped. And then that man, the holy man, was still walking. The sage was, the yogi was still walking along, walking away. What was the state of mind of the person who could walk away like that? That person is probably always happy. If you can do that, probably you're always happy.
So happy.
And then, just to put the record straight and conclude the story, it seems this soldier returned to the boss and said, boss, you and I both go to hell because he seems to be a holy man and we have offended him. And the prince and the soldier ran after this holy man and fell at his feet. And he said, yes, what do you want? These are your arms. Oh, I see, put them back. Put them back. Put. They stuck and he walked on. That's all right, no offense meant. You know, we hold each other's hands in love. And you are holding my hand for a little while. So you must be in love with me.
I mean, stories like that give us a picture of yogis not taking it in.
Quite.
You were saying last night.
That's it. It's unfortunate. I mean, there are yogis who can do that. And again, I have not seen it myself. Though I have seen people who could brush off severe pain as if nothing happened. Pain which would knock you unconscious doesn't seem to bother them. So, such things I have seen. I have not seen these grotesque.
But even that, even accepting pain, must be another state or a state
exactly.
Of awareness of the...
You are correct. So even then, there is some dissatisfaction even there. That is, you are aware of something going on. You are aware that this is happening to the body and not to me.
So you're saying awareness is dissatisfaction?
No, the awareness alone is not dissatisfaction. There is awareness of dissatisfaction. My eyes are seeing you. The eyes are not you. Right? The awareness is aware of this dissatisfaction, and therefore there is no dissatisfaction in the awareness.
Does that mean, Swami, that an enlightened man or person is not dissatisfied?
He is not dissatisfied, as I said, in a complicated sense. That he sees dissatisfaction as inherent in physical life. And he also feels hungry, but he sees that it is just a manifestation of physical need. Not like you and me. I am hungry. I must have it immediately. Otherwise you go mad. He sees hunger as a physical need. With all that statement implies. For instance, your trousers are creased. Well, you look at it. They would do with some pressing. No mind. If not today, tomorrow. The trousers are creased, not you. If, for instance, you had a severe headache, you wouldn't say, oh, well, there's a little pain in the head. No mind, we'll see, deal with it tomorrow. You see the difference? When it comes to trousers, they can be pressed tomorrow, no mind. It's only the trousers that need pressing, not me. But when it comes to the body, a physical pain, you don't take it like that. In his case, he is able to do that. He is able to say that this happens to the body, never mind, we'll deal with that. So he says, all right, the body needs some food, is there anyone that who can give this body some food? Nobody, no volunteer. All right, we'll see tomorrow. So, he sees dissatisfaction as belonging to that, not this, not me. I am this pure awareness. I am aware that my trousers need pressing, the body needs food, and so on. That's all. That's practically the only thing. The body needs food or medicine or whatever, treatment. It's that, not I.
What constitutes an enlightened person?
What constitutes an enlightened person? You must ask an enlightened person.
Yeah.
What constitutes enlightened person? Only enlightened persons know. What constitutes non-enlightenment? Pardon? Yeah, correct. So we should be quite clear, familiar with it. You and I are familiar with non-enlightenment. Delusion, ignorance. What do we do in ignorance? Or what constitutes ignorance? All that is absent in him. Our doubts and our foolishness and our... That's it. We live in a world of make-believe. And he lives in a world of truth. Possibly. One can, one has often heard that, though I'm not sure. I suppose there is a dimmer there also. Is it? Is there a dimmer here for this? No. Possibly there is a dimmer there, so different degrees of enlightenment.
Swami, you can't see a truth until you're ready, and you can't tell anyone else of this truth or this degree of attainment to enlightenment until they're ready. But who says that the person's ready for the next truth that they may learn?
They don't have hunger. Their hunger. Their hunger. Or let's put it this way, it's more like the cry of a baby, an infant. You as a mother, you know whether the baby is crying because it wants some milk or because there is some discomfort or pain.
So you're saying there's an outside influence that decides?
No, it's not an outside influence. The seeker, he cries. You are the enlightened person, and I am the seeker. I cry. And you know exactly what to give me. Or at what level I am when I am crying. And you know what to give me. And you will give me only that. You will take me up to that stage of enlightenment, which I deserve. Not more, not less. And if, for instance, the baby is crying because of some discomfort or pain, and you as the mother either misread the cry or you just don't have any medicine for that, any remedy for that, then what will I do? I'll keep on crying. You give me some milk, I'll probably spit it out and then keep on crying. You will put the sutra in, I spit it.
But you're talking on the mother and the child.
Yeah.
I was talking about
the teacher and the enlightened one and the seeker. Exactly the same thing. Exactly the same thing happens between the enlightened teacher and the seeker.
But if the person hasn't a teacher, there's some people that just have to...
What is a teacher, madam?
Everything you come in contact
with. Yeah, exactly. So it's not possible for me not to come into contact with anything. If I am hungry, I will know. I'll eat this. If I am truly hungry and starving, I'll eat this. That complete enlightenment. Doesn't leave anything behind. That is, you don't exist as an ego with a mind and body after that complete enlightenment. You don't exist as the ego, mind and body after that complete enlightenment.
What do you exist
enlightenment. And if the body exists, it exists independent of enlightenment, governed by its own what is called karma. A beautiful example is given in the Vedantic texts. Like a wheel of a bicycle, for instance. You rotate it while it is stationary, and even after you have stopped rotating the pedals, the wheel still turns. Because of the momentum given to it by the past effort. You don't have to do anything, you just leave it there. After turning a few rounds, it will stop. So, after enlightenment, if the body continues, the body will continue to function on its own due to past momentum, and when that momentum is finished, falls. That is what is called karma, prarabdha karma.
That means the complete enlightenment wouldn't allow the body to exist for any more than a certain period of time.
Sure. The body would, in any case, not exist beyond a certain period of time. It seems to have its own. Earmarked. Its lifespan is earmarked. Enlightenment is totally independent of all this botheration about the body or mind and ego and so on.
That's taking them as three separate things, then, isn't it? The ego, mind and body.
I'm sorry, ego shouldn't be there. Ego wouldn't be there. The mind and body can continue to exist through past momentum. The ego is seen to be non-existent. That is enlightenment. In our case, it is the ego that rules the mind and body. When there is enlightenment, the ego is seen to be non-existent. The thing called self. I am so and so, I am this, I am Swami. That disappears. When that is gone, whatever is left is left. The body is left, the body is left. The body will continue to roll for a little while, but governed by the cosmic will or the prarabdha karma, not by me. I am no longer responsible for the body. I don't want it to last, I don't want it to die, I don't want it to live. It goes on as long as it has to go on, and it falls when it has to fall. And the mind similarly functions for some time till its momentum is exhausted, and that's it. According to the enlightened people, even you and I are really the same. Your body also is subject to karma. It will function as long as it has to function and stop to function when that is finished. But there is a foolish idea that this is my body or this I am. right? If you examine it carefully, it is only that the feeling, this I am, that there is a knife on the carpet, and you pick it up and throw it away because, oh my God, it would have hurt me. No one says it would have hurt this body. Because if you cultivate the attitude that it would have hurt this body, then you would probably feel as responsible for that body as you feel responsible to for this body. Because body is body. Knife cutting anybody is somebody. But there is a feeling that this I am, that is not I. So I should not be hurt. Well, it doesn't matter what happens to him. I should be happy. And even when it comes to enlightenment, I should be enlightened. Why not somebody else?
What is the I then?
That's it. The moment you begin to inquire into that, you realize that it is not there. It has never been there. But this inquiry is not merely, you know, talking about what is this I then after a nice tea. But really, really working hard at that. And trying to see if this is the truth. Not merely saying some words, I am not the body, or the enlightenment is not the body. If the enlightenment is not the body, why is there the feeling inside that what is happening to the body is happening to me? Why do I not feel that this is happening to the body? Sure, it is painful, but it is happening to the body. When you reach that point, then there is a certain calmness within, isn't it? You are no longer frantic. You may still eat, you may still drink, you may still sleep, you may still get married and raise children, but you are not frantic. You can't figure out what that peace or satisfaction is intellectually, and then try to see if I'm also peaceful. Like, can I be enlightened? May not. You see, if you put the switch on, the light comes on. But supposing you strike a match, a cigarette lighter, push it into the bulb there, the switch won't come on. The switch won't be turned on. If you are enlightened, there is a certain inner calm, inner peace, joy, bliss and all that, satisfaction and all that. But you can't manipulate your mind and introduce all this. I'm going to be calm hereafter. I'm going to be peaceful hereafter. I'm going to be blissful hereafter. And hope that enlightenment will result. That is like trying to hold a cigarette lighter inside this lamp and hoping that the switch will turn itself on. It won't. You have to turn the switch on, then the light comes on automatically. So find this enlightenment or truth, then all these things are added unto you without difficulty.
Find it.
They say, again, the sages who have reached it, they say that it's easier than anything else because you are there already.
But not me.
This is not something which you do not have and which you... No. This is not something which you do not have and which you have to acquire. This is not something which is not here, to find which you have to go to the Himalayas. It is here, everywhere, it is you. Find out who this you is, who this I is. So simple it is.
Do you consider yourself enlightened to any extent?
I have no idea. The faintest idea.
Come on.
I'm not the faintest idea. Then they can say if they are enlightened, why not? No, why not? People have said.
But does that mean that an enlightened person has that perception, that dichotomy?
I don't know, but they have said so.
I remember somebody asking Swami Satchidananda the same question, and all he said was, the answer would be of no value to you.
Some yogis have said, even set their date of enlightenment.
Said what?
Said on certain the date I got an enlightenment.
How did they relate back to their whole lifestyle would have to change?
The lifestyle may not change. The lifestyle may not change. May not. Because what you call lifestyle is related to the body and the mind.
And also what's happening around you, coming involved in it all the time.
Yes. But when you say you are still referring to the body and the mind, the personality. That may or may not change. Because the body-mind complex, which is the personality, that is governed by the past momentum, karma. That may have to go through the same. So that, at least in Indian tradition, you have saints who have been all sorts of things. A weaver was a saint. A cobbler, an enlightened person. A butcher, he was an enlightened person. And without even dropping their professions, they keep on doing what they have been doing. And some have been householders with the family men, and they have continued to live a family life. Some have dropped their family and gone away.
It seems that people become enlightened at death at any age, but it's an achievement.
No, I mean, we don't automatically become enlightened by him at death.
Well, those that become enlightened, do they apparently see themselves as they are in all of their past incarnations?
They might or might not. This is one of the things that may be given to you. If you are interested, if this man was interested in understanding his past incarnations, he might have. But he might... In the Yoga Vasishtha, there is a very beautiful story, the story of Leela. And suddenly she becomes enlightened. And she says, my God, I have been all sorts of funny things. I have been a mosquito, I have been a butterfly, I have been a celestial angel, I have been an elephant, I have been a tiger. All right. Then suddenly you realize that all that is related to the I again, the ego self. It is the ego self that has been envisioning itself in all these various incarnations. And when the ego self is seen to be non-existent in reality, in truth, who reincarnates and what as what? In other words, it is very much like, I hope that nobody here of this description, there are some Jungians who keep a record of all their dreams. You heard about it? You don't belong to this club. Yes.
Jungians,
yes.
The psychologist Jung.
The devotees of Carl Jung. They sometimes keep a faithful record of all their dreams. All right, if you want to, you can. But when you realize that they were all only dreams, what is the record worth? you exactly another dream. So of what tremendous value it is to keep a record of all these dreams. If you want to, they say, all right, you can have. Then, as David said, that becomes another dream. Your recollection of all these past incarnations becomes another dream. Some yogis pass through that.
Does that mean that this life is a dream time?
Naturally. Naturally. There is a very beautiful story in the Yoga Vasishtha again, which elicits that. I'll give it you in 2 minutes. A great sage meditates upon God, and God appears to him and says, what do you want? Any boon you want, I'll give you. And the sage asks for a very funny boon. Lord, I want to see your Maya. Maya means illusory power, the power of illusion. And God says, all right, you will have it. Then One day, the sage takes bath in the river, plunges into it. Suddenly he sees something. He sees that he is dead and he is born somewhere else. He was a king and was roaming the forest and horrible, miserable, leads a very miserable life and eventually commits suicide. And then suddenly he wakes up and he was still in the water. Then he comes out. He says, he was wondering, now, all that, where was it? Was it a dream or was it reality? Then he goes and verifies. He asks the Lord, what is this? And he says, you wanted to know my illusion, so you saw it. Then he wants to check. And he finds out that those places do exist. He goes there and asks, and people say, yes, there was a king here and he was a very miserable man and so on. And then he comes back to the Lord again and says, but how can it be that what I saw in dream, I could later verify? And the Lord asks him, who told you that that was real? Who told you that this verification was real? Sometimes you dream. I don't know if you have experiences. I have quite often. Sometimes you dream. Let's say it's an unpleasant dream. You wake up. It's only a dream. All right. And then you dream again, knowing that this is all only a dream. A dream within a dream within a dream. You are telling yourself in the dream, but all this only this is only a dream. That is also a dream. A funny thing. So we are all sitting here and talking about the world dream. This is also a dream.